Welcome, welcome. It's time for the 54th edition of the Fame Fatale podcast. Welcome to it. Hands up, assuming you survived the battle at Castle Black this weekend, because Game of Thrones, it does not disappoint when it comes to killing folk. I can tell you that if you want to see some folk die violently, highly recommend that show. There's axe killings, and there's giant scythes, and there's giants smashing people, and there's spears, and there's arrows, and it's great. It's creative killing.
Sex and death, huh?
Love it. Sex and death, but it's creative killing. You know, Baby Vegas.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, my co-host today. Hello. A listener wrote in today to tell me that this past Sunday's episode of Game of Thrones was boring. It was an hour-long fight scene in which bunches of characters die in awesome ways. I was highly amused. They invented like a whole giant axe, like several stories high, that when you loose it, it just kills everybody on the wall. It was great. You have no idea what I'm talking about because you don't watch these
but
things.
But I have access to HBO Go now, and I'm slowly making my way through everything up
If it was about young, beautiful people falling in love, you would watch it, wouldn't
Absolutely.
You? And there are, so you should be watching
okay.
it. Busted! Anyway, this is a podcast about me, anyway, longtime entertainment journalist, taking questions from you, worshipful listener of me, about how the world of celebrity really works. Now, just one warning, Studio Cat is in the studio today. And she's yelling a lot to be loved on by the sound engineer. So if you hear Kat yelling out of this tiny pinhead that she has, that's why.
And
by
the way, this is a big moment for me, guys, because
she hates the strange human. She hates the strange human. And you know it. You know how when you sometimes you look at something and you don't really know what it really looks like until you see a photo of it. Like you see it in real life and it looks one way, and then you see a photo and you're like, holy crap, that person has irregular eyeballs, and you never even knew. Well, this cat, I put a picture of Studio Cat up on Twitter. She has got a pinhead, like a pinhead, like the kind that used to be in carnivals, like a carnival freak pinhead. It's just that the rest of her grew and the head didn't, and now it just yells all the time. She's yelling. Anyway, coming up on the show, we have a one-sided cage match that I'll still win.
I don't know. I'm feeling confident.
All right. I mean, I could just whip out...
whip something out.
I could just whip out one of my old ones.
Sure.
And I'd still win. Sound engineer says no. Okay. But in the meantime, ask a question.
Maybe you'll think of one as I'm delivering
mine. You mean make
mine.
One up? That's entirely possible. Go ahead.
All right, James L. via Facebook.
What?
Hello, Leslie.
Hi.
I was just wondering, what happens when a recording artist isn't able to pay back their record label advances? Does that automatically mean they're dropped from that label? Or does it go into collections like a credit card when a normal person can't pay back their debt?
All right, I went to our resident music industry veteran, Lisa B. Jenkins.
What
for
up,
this
Lisa?
One. What up, Lisa? Who is now, by the way, a principal at her new social media marketing and branding firm, Fathom Impact, as well as still the co-host of the Nerd Out podcast.
Lisa!
Because in order to survive these days, you have to have like 10 jobs.
Yeah,
you need to be like
so
Jamaican
hats.
About it and have like 10, and that's what she has. That's what I have. And here's what she tells me. In the, quote, usual record deal world, mm-hmm. close quote, an artist is given an advance to record their album. That cost, as well as anything else like recording, promotional, et cetera, costs, they're deducted from the artist's earnings as they make money and sell records. Those are called recoupable costs. Mm-hmm. So if I give you $5 mm-hmm. to make your record, mm-hmm. okay, and then I start selling your record, mm-hmm. and your deal is you're going to get one penny for every record I sell of yours. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You owe me $5 worth of pennies. You owe me 500 records.
Okay.
Okay? So the first 500 records, you don't get paid anything because mm-hmm. you're recouping the cost of the $5.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But after that, you're going to start getting money.
Right.
Now, those are called recoupable costs, and the label can recoup them from the artist. But breaking news, unless you're Katy Perry, you're not going to see any of the money from record sales.
Oh, wow.
You won't even get to the $5.
Shoot.
You won't even get to the 500. Okay.
Ooh.
The more, this is why, and it's all the label's fault.
Mm-hmm.
The more the album sells, the more the label promotes you, the more you incur recoupable costs, the more the label recoups them.
Oh.
So the only way you're going to sell your 500 albums and recoup the $5 is if I promote you.
True.
And if I decide that your album is ass,
mm-hmm.
then I will just be like, I'm not going to spend any more money on you, and you're in the hole for $5.
Wow.
Now, that said, assuming the label keeps you around for record number two, you're most likely already in the hole and owe them money for record one. Plus, perhaps another advance to record your new album. That could still happen. And so on and so forth. Which is why some artists called it the label system slavery. Do you remember when Prince called himself a slave? He put slave on his face.
Word
slave on his face. He wasn't talking about some African-American thing. He was talking about his label.
Was he still Prince?
I think he might have been a symbol. The good news is, unless it's a special case, when your label drops you, you walk away with no debt to them. You owe money for hair and makeup, for travel, whatever, that's on you.
Shoot.
But, let me make this clear. If I give you $5 to record your album, and I never make the $5 back, you know, maybe I don't promote you, maybe you only sell 40 albums, whatever, I don't then come to you and say you owe me $4.20.
Right.
That money is gone forever. So no, there is no collections process.
Right.
It just means that you may be in the hole to me if we ever decide to do business again.
But they make you pay for hair and makeup.
Oh, they make you pay for everything.
Which is crazy because
that's what your advance is for.
Yes, well, so you better be independently wealthy.
Or get them to promote you, do whatever it takes to get them to launch you as the next Katy Perry or the next Lady Gaga.
And girl was eating cheese sandwiches before she made it, so...
Oh, you're kidding me? That's good. Metallica used to eat something called the Loser's Lunch. They called it bologna on hand.
Oh, no.
When Metallica was starting out, that was what they ate. They had a piece up. They went into the fridge and got a piece of bologna and ate on it.
God.
That's how it is.
Yikes.
But it's the same way in book deals. I mean, I'll be fully honest with you. You know, my first book, they gave me a nice advance. Four-figure advance. I never made that advance back in my books. That said... This is interesting.
Yeah.
They offered me a second deal. They came to me and said, there's definitely still a market for this book. We want you to update it. And we're going to pay you another advance.
Boom.
Yeah, it wasn't a very big advance. It was actually a pretty assy advance. But they did do that. They didn't say, and you owe us from the last advance, so consider yourself, just do it. They didn't do that. They said, this is not against your advance. This is, and not only that, we're not going to like add it all up. We're just wiping it clean.
When does that come out?
It comes out this fall. Oh. And you'll know more later because I'm sure there's going to be giveaways and appearances.
Yeah.
Assuming they have a promotional budget, which I'm sure they don't.
Well, we might be able to see you live in the flesh at a bookstore or something like that.
Yes. When my last book launched, I did do live in the bookstore events twice, actually. Not once, twice.
Cool. I don't think that we knew each other at that point.
No, we didn't.
So I'm
we didn't.
I'm
it was
excited.
Like way back in like 2009 or some terrible year of our Lord, you know, ancient time. But
and,
yes.
And what's your book called again?
It is called, well, it's going to get a new name.
Oh.
It's going to get a new name. I'll tell you more. I think I'll tell you more like maybe in some other form.
Sure.
Maybe perhaps the Facebook or the Twitter or the Tumblr. I don't know why I have it. Or the Google Plus. I'm not sure why I have.
Every once in a while, I'll get an update that says, so-and-so added you on Google Plus and... That's really the only time I remember I have a Google Plus account.
Before we get to the next question, let's do a cage match. For those of you who are not familiar with my cage matches, of course, I oftentimes would like to slowly but firmly strangle my co-host's pencil neck, but I can't do that because when I last checked, it's still illegal. So instead, we do a virtual fight. With virtual weapons, and those weapons are celebrity sightings. We each bring one to the table, and our sound engineer decides the winner. Of course, I'm always the winner. It doesn't really matter. And technically, this week, I don't have anyone, but that doesn't matter because I always win.
It's an honor just to be nominated.
Go ahead, JJ. Tell me your celebrity sighting.
So, speaking of Prince, I went this past Friday to Maya Rudolph's Prince cover band called Princess. For the 30th anniversary of Purple Rain, which was on Friday, they covered the entire album.
Oh.
Her and like a best friend that I don't know what her deal is, but her name's Gretchen. And so we were second row. And that woman is just, I've never met a celebrity that looks exactly like they do on TV in real life. She is, that looks exactly the same size as she looks on TV. Her hair is beautiful. She's beautiful. She's a beautiful woman. And she gave it. She just gave this performance everything. It was incredible. And then towards the end, like they had a couple songs left to go, they called on people in costumes up on the stage to win LPs, Prince LPs. Only one guy dressed as Prince. Nobody else dressed up. And they're like, oh my God, what? Okay, well, who's got flair? And of course, I got flair.
Oh, God.
And I was wearing gold sequin fronted pants. But I got flair. This is just my clothes. I don't know. For some reason, I felt a little shy going on stage.
No, you
my
didn't.
My friends practically threw me up there.
I'm sure they had to push you. I'm sure that you had to be dragged up there.
Well, once I was up there, I was right at home. But so she serenaded me with a song she wrote about my gold pants.
You're kidding
that
me.
That went something like, gold pants, gold pants, gold pants. And then she looked at me and said, never change, gold pants, never change. Change your pants.
You're kidding.
And it was amazing. And I got a little red Corvette record that was icing on the cake. We stayed around afterwards and we met her. This woman is so chill. She was so happy to engage with us. She was joking with us.
Did she know your name or were you just Gold Pants?
Well, she was like, oh, hey, Gold Pants. and then we met and I told her, I said, Maya, whenever I'm having a blue day, I'm just going to call back to you telling me, never change, Gold Pants. Never change.
And she said,
she laughed and said, oh, never change. Thank you.
You know, this is pretty good.
Right?
I'm talking to my sound engineer now. I may actually have to admit defeat. Usually my nothing is better than your something.
That's true.
I would say 90% of the time.
I think in 5 years, this is my best.
And I wasn't impressed during the first third of you flapping your yak because that was not a celebrity sighting in the wild. You had paid to see a caged celebrity.
That's true.
But then things took a turn. They took a dramatic narrative turn that I didn't see coming. I think I have to admit defeat. I think that you win this cage match. Never change, Gold Pants. Never change your pants.
I'm speechless.
Well, that's too bad because you got to read another question.
Well, I will tweet a photo so the listeners can see me on stage with Maya Rudolph.
Yes, and if my listeners are rude to me, I will retweet that photo. Go ahead.
Okay. Laura C. writes via Facebook, mm-hmm. Leslie.
What?
This is my question.
Go.
Can you please explain the phenomenon of the Blacklist that's supposedly the best unproduced screenplays of the year end up on? How did this begin? What are some movies that we would know that came from this list? And why the name? I feel the Blacklist generally implies something is bad and we should stay the hell away from it. Curious. Also, been following you since the Answer Bitch days. Thanks for being the HBIC.
See, I never changed. I've always had the gold
you
pants.
You have always.
I've had the gold pants for like 10 years.
Girl, even when you're wearing shorts, you're wearing gold pants.
I'm wearing virtual gold pants. Now, for those of you who don't know what this person is talking about, there is a phenomenon in Hollywood called the Blacklist. It's a real thing. It's actually like capital B, capital L. It's like a, it's not just like a rumor, like the Blacklist. It's the Blacklist. Mm-hmm. It was started by a guy in 2005 named Franklin Leonard while Franklin Leonard was working at Appian Way. And Appian Way, by the way, is Leo's production company.
Oh.
Leo DiCaprio's production company. And I don't know why Franklin did this, but he contacted a bunch of executives and managers and assistants and other industry members. And he said, I want to make this list. Here's the criteria. To make it on this list.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is what you need to have. The respondents to the annual call for best scripts must send in a list of 10 scripts. They must be amazing. They must have only come to the respondents' attention during the calendar year. And they must not be scheduled to go into production in that same calendar year. In other words, Franklin Leonard sent out this note to all of his connections and said, come on, guys, what are some of the best scripts you've seen all year that for whatever reason just kept getting a pass? And they came back with scripts like Juno, Lars and the Real Girl.
Love.
Charlie Wilson's War. Horrible Bosses. And since 2005, the list has come out annually and featured, you're never going to believe this, Social Network.
What?
King's Speech. Overrated, but got an Oscar.
Yeah.
Slumdog Millionaire. Not overrated. And Argo. Maybe overrated. But in the last 7 years, about 250 Blacklist screenplays have been made into movies.
Whoa.
And every year he still does this. He'll send out a survey to all of his connections and say, what are some of these screenplays? And he'll post the list.
Mm-hmm.
And then producers will be like, oh my God, the Blacklist. We missed that. Let's go snap it up. And then they get made.
Whoa.
Because, ironically, because they were rejected for a year.
Right.
It's a crazy phenomenon. Here are some other phenomenal numbers.
So the Blacklist is the
Good list.
Uh-huh.
You want to be the best rejected thing. Yes. They have earned these movies $16 billion at the global box office, as well as roughly 165 Academy Award nominations, 35 wins.
Oh.
And 5 of the last 10 screenwriting Oscars.
Wow.
And he chose the name, by the way, The Blacklist, for two reasons. Mm-hmm. One, he wanted to actually reclaim the word. You know how, like, reclamation is a big thing out there? Like, you say the word bitch, but you mean it in the... It's the same thing. It's like vocabulary reclamation. And also to pay tribute to the Hollywood Blacklist in the 1950s. Okay?
Love it.
And there's going to be a 10th annual release later this year. Maybe I should come back and see what's going to be snapped up and made into an Oscar.
I think so.
Now, I got this... all this from the Blacklist people themselves, but I was not satisfied.
No.
We had this email exchange, and I'm like, that's great, that's great, that's great. By the way, you can go to the Blacklist website, and I'll be posting it on my blog if you want to see it themselves, because they post real-time top lists generated from highly rated scripts currently hosted on the site.
Right.
That's their sort of newer venture, is if you have a script... Uh-huh. And you should by now, and you don't, by the way. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this over dinner. If you have a movie script and you want feedback, you want attention for it, you want to develop it, the site, for a fee, the site will upload it, you know, get it in front of, not necessarily, you know, I'm not exactly sure, but people who will read it and give you feedback and all this stuff. Oh. This is why I wanted more information, okay? I was not satisfied with what I got. The other thing I really wanted to know, mm-hmm. was why.
Yeah.
Why had these obviously great scripts not gotten made or not snatched up or something? Like, what was it about these scripts where they were so amazing, but they kept getting passed out? Was it that they weren't seen as commercial at the time? They just didn't have the financing. They weren't attached. No actors were attached. What was it? And you know, when I'm not satisfied by an answer, I do not stop until I get the answers I want. So here's what's going on. I'm in the process of getting Franklin Leonard on the phone. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get him on the blower. I want to get these questions answered. And when he does, I'm going to put it here in the podcast.
Can't wait.
I'm working on it. We have a tentative date set up for later this week.
Excellent.
I'm going to do the interview. And with any luck, at this time next week, you will actually be hearing more about this. Because that's the big question, is if these movies are so great, what happened? What's going on? Is it all psychology? Is it money? Is it something else?
I mean, they're all so different as well. You just listed all these movies across the genre that were all on the Blacklist and that all made it to the big time. So how funny that across the path, why are we saying no?
I mean, the one commonality I am seeing, Social Network, King's Speech, Slumdog Millionaire, Juno, what is the one commonality that you see? Can you?
No.
What? None of them have instant blockbuster action international appeal.
That's true. Lars and the Real Girl.
None of them have vampires or robots or, you know, post-apocalyptic societies. Right. None of them have any of those things. Obviously, these are character-driven pieces, and everybody knows that those are harder to make in Hollywood. But then again, you don't have to spend a lot of money either, so I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. And now we come to our letter segment, Burn After Reading, in which I read your feedback, and I try real hard not to judge. Go ahead.
Ooh. All right. Regina Cartwright writes in via the Femme Fatale website, Kim K is such a fame whore. She's on the way out. She's going to have to get a double Brazilian butt lift just to get another headline. Just saying.
Just saying. All right. I read this and I thought to myself, what is riveting me about this letter? What? I knew that there were Brazilian waxes.
Right.
And if, in case you're not sure what happens with the Brazilian bikini wax, they wax the hair in your buttocks as well as the hair in the vajayjay area. They wax everything from the top all the way around the body. They do that. I survived one once. Never again. No. Never again. I knew that there were butt lifts. I did not know there were Brazilian butt lifts until this letter. I love when I learn from my listeners. I love it. So I did some research, because that's my job. And no matter how hard it is, let's just remember I do this for you. There are essentially two different kinds of butt lifts. I didn't know this.
Lay it on us.
The Brazilian butt lift, actually, some celebrities have gotten this Brazilian butt lift. It's a real thing. Countess Vaughn from Moesha has said she has. And so has Heidi Montag, if you consider her a star. And I do not. Do not write me more letters, right? But this is what it happens. There are two kinds of butt lifts. One involves an implant, and the other is the Brazilian butt lift, which transfers fat from other areas of your body to your buttocks. And in some cases, if there's not sufficient fat elsewhere in the body, then your implants may be a more prudent choice. But I found out all kinds of things. Did you know that it's the preferred butt lift of plastic surgeons everywhere?
I did not.
And I'll tell you why. Please. Want to hear it? Here it go. Because if it's your own fat, there's less risk of infection.
Oh.
After all, it's your own fat, so it won't be rejected by your body. Second, wait. There's a combination of the injections or transfer to your buttocks and then the fat taken away from the other areas through liposuction. And it can also create a more uniformly shapely natural enhancement. It was fascinating. I read up all about the butt. Now, oh, by the way, for 3 weeks after the operation, you can't sit directly on your buttocks.
Oh, my God.
Sit on something else. Sit on an elbow.
You must
sit on your face.
Have a standing desk.
That's right. So for like 3 weeks, Countess couldn't do anything.
I guess you have to walk everywhere then, huh?
And you're also often encouraged to wear a compression garment for 6 weeks.
Sounds like
to improve the shape. Yes.
I think I'd rather work out.
But the procedure only takes about 2 hours to perform.
Oh.
Yes. That's right. Under general anesthesia, they do knock you out. They do, because safety is, of course, the number one priority of these people.
Right.
Oh, by the way, did you know they purify the fat after they harvest it? They harvest it, purify it.
How do they do that?
I don't know if they use sparkles. I don't know what they use. And then they go back and then they put it in after it's purified and it's transferred into the gluteus muscles surrounding the tissue of the buttocks.
They take out the Doritos residue and just leave the avocados
and almonds.
There's
no cheese left. It's just pure golden grease.
Oh, yum.
It's right.
Seems like a lot of work.
Well, yeah. But I mean, if you're Countess Vaughn and you hate your flat butt.
I mean, I think I'd rather exercise more regularly than have to wear a compression belt for 6 weeks.
If, by the way, if you're wondering if this hate letter against Kim Kardashian bothers me, it doesn't. She made her own fate when she was married for 76 days and had a fake wedding. All right, next question. Another letter. Go.
Yeah. Katie S. writes via the Femme Fatale website. We would love to work with your site in some capacity, such as through contributing unique content or by providing a display for placement. The guest editorial will be professionally written and will reference my client's site the most established provider of adult products for both men and women in the U.S. Not safe for work. If a banner is preferred, I am happy to send over a few options for review.
Oh, wow. Baby Vegas, the porn people want to advertise on my site.
Katie S., I just didn't know that's what was coming after the next
page. The porn people want to do business with you, listener.
You know you're making it.
I think I'll pass. But if you're an advertiser looking for a fresh way to reach smart people worldwide, write to me. Baby Vegas, tell them how to reach me.
Oh, they can find you on Twitter at Femme Fatale Says.
At Femme Fatale Says, yes.
Uh-huh. They can find you on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. They can find you on the www at www.thefemmefatale.com.
That's right.
And you've also got a Tumblr, right?
I do, and I don't know why.
What is your Tumblr?
I don't even know.
No?
I think it's the Femme Fatale. It could be Femme Fatale. I don't even know. I don't even know why I have it. I've also, like I said, got a Google Plus. Don't know what the hell I'm doing with it.
When you get in with the Tumblr kids, though, they work for you.
Do they really?
Uh-huh.
Really?
They just explode.
Do they do what now?
They just explode through this network.
They explode? All right, that's good. Yeah. That's really good. And of course, you can always email me oldschool at Leslie@thefemmefatale.com. All of you safe for work advertisers, now you know where to reach me. By the way, now that we've reached the end of the show, Baby Vegas, how can they reach you?
They can find me on Twitter at Baby Vegas with a Z.
If they feel like it.
If they feel like it.
That's where you send all the not safe for work stuff.
But I'm like 47 followers away from 1,000, so guys, make my month.
Follow Gold Pants. I mean, he's Gold Pants.
Gold
Pants.
Does
Maya Rudolph follow you yet?
No, but I got to tweet her that photo.
You do?
Yeah.
You need to do that forthwith. Okay. And then, of course, you could bring that as a follow-up cage match, which you will definitely lose.
Oh my gosh. Well, I will see if I can find a way where I can tweet her this podcast as well as that photo on the same tweet.
It's getting really meta.
Can't wait.
I can't wait either. And if you do that, and if you get Maya Rudolph to retweet this podcast, I will buy you another set of gold sequin pants. No, there
deal.
Are, there are. I'm telling you right now, if you are listening to me, that is a real promise. If Maya Rudolph tweets this episode, retweets this episode to her followers, Baby Vegas gets another set of gold sequined pants.
Come on, Maya.
You heard it here. It's for real. And you know I never lie.
Challenge accepted. You don't. Only truth.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's show. We will see you next week.
Gold pants.
He's the man with the Midas
pants.